listening to KRUU LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Grassroots, listener-supported, solar-powered radio broadcasting from the Cultural District here in Fairfield, Iowa. And this is Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and Caroline wasn't able to be with us here today, but she'll be back on the air with us next week. And we have a guest today who will, if you're listening to us on June 26th, will be at Revelations this evening doing a reading. And if you're listening to us after that date, June 26th, 2015, you missed him this time, but maybe you can catch him on another time. And that is Paul Goldman. Paul Goldman is an ecstatic poet who lives and breathes these words of ecstasy sourced from his divine. After undergoing open-heart surgery in January of 2014, Paul now is more than ever engaged on a passionate mission to spread these messages of peace, solace, and connection to something greater than one's human self. Paul produced the spoken word CD, Wild Joy Released, the ecstatic poetry of Paul Goldman, with the assistance a friend and extraordinary musician, Tom Jacobs. Just a few short months later, Wild Joy Ruminations was published in 2010 by River Sanctuary Publishing. And the book that we're talking about today is called Upon Your Canvas, and it's poems by Paul Goldman and paintings by Natasha Kiefer. Welcome to Writer's Voices, Paul.
Thanks, Monica. I'm really glad to be here.
Tell us where you're calling from today.
Actually, Kansas City, outside of Kansas City, Overland Park, Kansas, the heartland.
And that's where you make your home?
It's where I do, in between traveling the country with this new book.
And what brings you to Fairfield?
Actually, Fairfield's one of the places that I wanted to go. I'm familiar that... At least for me, I know that Fairfield goes back into the early 70s as far as, at that time, being kind of a spiritual mecca. So that's my limited knowledge right there.
And have you ever been to Fairfield before?
I've not been to Fairfield. I know several friends from there through some Oneness Blessing group people and some people with the Mankind Project.
Oh.
I kind of have some connection that way.
Do you know Bruce Miller? I know he's involved Project, and he does the show right before Writers' Voices, the Filmosophers, which give a shout out for that. It's a great show where they look at movies from kind of a holistic, modern movies from a holistic perspective. It's very cool.
That sounds pretty interesting.
It is. You'll have to check that out, and you can listen KRUUFM.com. We stream online all around the world, so we have listeners all around the world. So,
oh, well, perfect. There may be some of my followers from Facebook there. I've got a few fans that are from all over the world.
That's great.
When I look at the statistics, it's pretty amazing.
It is. It's what the internet has done, has changed our world, really, I would say.
I have a big following in Indonesia and India and in some places, you know. It's
wow.
Possibly because they, you know, they hearken more back to the poetry of Rumi, of the mystics.
Right.
A little bit more than some of us do in the States. But, you know, Rumi's a top-selling poet, and he's been gone for 800 years.
So are you calling
to people, and my poetry has been compared to Rumi.
Are you hoping for that type of longevity?
Yes. I would love to be remembered after I am gone, and I would love to be remembered while I'm still here.
Be noticed while you're here, remembered after you're gone. I think that's noticed, maybe. Yeah. Well, Paul,
yes, noticed or remembered for sure.
How long have you been writing poetry?
Excellent question. I like to talk about that when I'm out on the book tour. And, you know, it's really interesting. I have always written. Don't know. It started early on, probably early teen years, even pre-teen years, even 11 or 12. And I joke, Monica, at that time it was the, you know, the typical teenage angst, you know, trying to figure out the world, you know, like hate, death, and war, why is it no more, I'm dead. So that's teenage angst. That's not what I write now.
That's
but,
good.
But, you know, it's indicative of that mindset of a young teenage boy trying to figure out his place in the world, you know?
I do know, and I think probably we're similar, from a similar age background, and I didn't know the boys did this, but the girls in like junior high, high school, I think mostly high school, we all had these poetry books that we put together with the little with covers and you know, those things, the three-hole punch and the little prongs that go through, and we'd write in them, and then we would maybe do some drawings in there, and it was, all my friends did it, and I found mine. And sometimes you it was your own poetry, but sometimes you'd also copy down something that you really liked, like from Khalil Gibran or a song lyric or something. And when I found years after, you know, 20 years later, when I found 25 years, 30 years, something like that, I found this book and I'm looking through it and I see this, what I think is a poem. And I think, wow, that is so cool. Did I write that? Well, it turns out I did not. Jim Croce did.
Exactly. I was really blessed too. I got involved in a youth group. And we actually had these conclaves and retreats, and interestingly enough, I mean, people came from around the country. We had them out at Unity Village, which is here outside of Kansas City, just out by Lee's Summit. And we would print these newsletters on mimeograph, okay?
Yep, I know what you're talking
about.
And it
would have my poetry, you know, and it would have my poetry in other people's writings.
Yeah, I have, we did some of those mimeograph newsletters with our poetry and stuff in it too, like in junior high, I think, maybe even elementary school. Wow.
So how many of our listeners would know what a mimeograph is?
anyone my age would, that's for sure. But
so, and my poetry then was even it was even at such a level that a few people took notice, and it was actually the youth group I belonged to, because I grew up Jewish, later became Buddhist, and that's another whole story. And but the poetry was noticed by my rabbi, who got the poetry to a English professor when I was 13. And
wow.
I wish there was a good outcome to that story. I'm not sure there is. The dear professor, learned as he was, wanted to instill in me the importance of perspiring for your craft, opposed to inspiration. You get me on that. I mean, I've had an issue with that forever. I mean, I totally get that the first thing a writer has to do is plant their posterior in the seat and begin to write. I get that. And I'm very fortunate now that most of what I do is actually from pure inspiration, and I do have the discipline to sit down whether I think I'm going to write or not, and I do more often than not write something that I'm pretty pleased with.
Do you write every day?
I did not like that as.
Yeah.
Say again.
Do you write every day?
You know, I do write every day. I have been very, very prolific, probably for the last 6 or 7 years. Earlier this year, I got invited to a Kansas Authors Club challenge on Facebook, and they've challenged each other to write 365 poems for the whole year. And with that, I sit down every day to write a poem. And where in the past I may wait a few days, write a couple, 2 to 3 poems in a day, yeah, I'm writing daily, and it feels really good.
But when you were 13...
And your listeners might find... Go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
What happens now is, as opposed to when I was 13, I used to, let me go back to that. I used to write poetry, you know, and over the years, and I kind of struggled to figure out what the poem was going to do and what it means, and then finally figured out what's the title for the poem. And so that's totally flipped. What happens now is I intuit the title. Mm. Once that title's on the page, the rest of the poem flows. Really, fairly effortlessly. It's quite a sweet process.
So that English professor that wanted you to sweat it out, what advice did he give you?
write. I don't know, kind of like write, you know, just keep writing, keep writing. Mm. Practice your craft, keep writing.
Well,
and, you know, that was easy to say, but there's a lot of us that write and go through droughts. And to, you know, while it has some merit, it takes a lot of discipline to write through the garbage.
That's true. Now, so did you keep writing, or were there periods of time in your life when you weren't writing?
The way that I view it was the times that I was not writing, those were the times of drought. Mm. And they'd pass, and I'd write again. About 6 years ago, a little over 6 years ago, I actually attended a class that a friend recommended, and it was a class on spiritual awakening, and really went there for some other reasons, including dealing with some grief issues and some things like that. We started to do some automatic writing. That was, even the old tools of using your non-dominant hand, so... You know, right-handed, write with the left hand, see what happens. Close your eyes, see what happens. And the most amazing thing happened. The floodgates to all of the spiritual poetry that had been in the threads of my writing for years really began to shift and change to where that's what I was writing. It felt as if Rumi had come through.
Wow.
That's, yeah. And then I look at the first project I did was my spoken word CD, Wild Joy, released. And then 6 months after that, some of the poems from that CD and a bunch of new poems were then put into Wild Joy Ruminations, my first book out. And I go back and look at that, and the change that I see from then to Upon Your Canvas, and the second book was Journey into Oneness. And so there's been this progression, and I've got more books ready that I've got people looking at to see what we might do next, maybe next year or another book. And the poems, a lot of them have become more succinct. They say what they've got to say and they get out of the way. Where in the past they were a little lengthier, and I'll still write longer poems, but I'm not an elegiac poet who's going to write a 5 or 7 or 17-page poem, you know.
Yeah. So you have 3 books of poetry out now that you've published?
I do. It's really exciting. things happened pretty quickly with the CD in 2010, the second book. And then I had this third book, Journey into Oneness. And I sought a publisher for that. And through various ways of connecting with people, really good networker, I found a publisher out of England, O Books, which is a fairly substantial spiritual book publisher out of the UK. And for all the writers out there, I think it's not more than anything, but one of the many things that I'm able to do on the tour is speak to the writing process and to other writers. I know when I was at Unity of Wichita in Wichita, Kansas, there was a writer there who was really moved and really found some inspiration in my process of writing and what's happened. With the second book, it was actually rejected, right? I mean, how many authors have the 10, 15, 20 rejections or whatever, 50, even, you know, before they get something really out there?
Oh, absolutely.
It was rejected by the publisher. But here's the funny thing. There was a little tiny crack in the door that was left open. Said, I can't publish this without further information. I can't publish this without further information. A very dangerous thing to say, Monica, to a writer, right? I'm going to give you more information. So I do know how to write. I do know how to persuade. And so I wrote back and I said, here's why I think it's going to work. Here's who the audience is. And let's go. And he wrote back and he said, because he'd already told me he loved the work. And so they decided to take it on. And that was published in November of 2011.
What was it? What was the information that he needed? It was just more of more what the market is for the book. Was that it, or
a lot of it was the market? A lot of it was the market, and who I thought that I would touch with the book. And you know, in the end, it was an interesting learning experience because my first book was cooperative publishing with what some people would call self-publishing with River Sanctuary Publishing. And I've gone back to that model for my recent book. Even with a major publisher like that, there still isn't a lot in the way of assistance. It's still up to the author to market the book.
Exactly.
And see the people.
And I think that's something that's different from 50 years ago, where the publishers took more responsibility for marketing. At least they may have expected the author to go out on tour, but they would set it all up, make all the arrangements.
It's
interesting with the whole growth in self-publishing that there's more books being published than ever, which makes it harder to bring attention to any specific book. But it also opens the door to people that traditional publishers would never have opened the door to before. And sometimes those books are wildly successful.
I think what I've learned through this process, a lot of what you're saying is right on. With my second book, had I been able to be free to go about the country and wherever and tour with it, I think things would have happened a little differently. That book would have taken off more than it did. I mean, there's some phenomenal reviews of that book. And it's the thing I'm finding in the appearances now. People are definitely getting the message of the poetry. And
why were you not able to do that?
I was working full-time.
Ah. So what is your day job? Paul?
Go ahead.
Okay, what is your day job?
Yes. This is my day job.
This is your day job, but when you were working full time, what were you doing?
Okay. I've got a master's in counseling psychology.
Okay.
And so I've been a therapist, and I've been in sales, and I've been in customer service. And I was actually the last couple of years before, and this included the time of the heart surgery, and I went back to it, I was the official title of a non-registered retirement education specialist. So I got to help folks that called in on their retirement plans.
Ah. You're listening to Writers... You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Paul Goldman, author of Upon Your Canvas, and Paul will be giving a presentation at Revelations. Do you want to give us some details about that? About your...
Love to, Monica.
Sure.
A lot of times people are not sure what to expect at a book reading and signing. I liken mine to more of an ecstatic performance because this poetry moves, has a lyricism of its own. And, again, it's in the vein of Rumi. So even when I've read, like, Rumi's Guest House, which is one of my favorite poems by him. Look that one up. It's not a static. It's a movement. It's an up-and-down sway of emotions. It's a very expressive performance. And what I've done also is I've added the addition of playing a CD of some music in the background. Don't know if anybody's familiar with the Hong. It looks like an upside down. It looks like a flying saucer, really. Okay, mm-hmm. And it's like a Jamaican steel drum that's dimpled, and the instrument is played with the hands, and it sounds variously like running water, harp or something like that. It's real beautiful.
Mm.
And a friend of mine named Matt Venuti. You can find mattvenuti.com. I think it's V-E-N-U-T-I. Plus there's two. I think there's one T. And he's given me permission to play a CD at all my events if I'd like to. So
wow.
It's kind of a nice accompaniment. It's kind of a nice underlay to the spoken word.
And what time is
the response from people? It's going to be at 7 o'clock.
7 p.m. Revelations, June 26th. That's a Friday evening.
Yes.
Yes.
That is it.
In the year 2015. In case you're listening to this
and
after
the
fact.
Time, it's usually been pretty active. There's some time for questions at the end. If people have questions about the writing process, about the inspiration for the poems, and, you know, a lot of people find the poetry to be very moving and transformational. I mean, the messages of hope and peace and solace, things that are sorely needed as we continue to move on in the world.
Well, Paul, do you want to share some poems with our listeners today?
I'd love to. Let me see what grabs up here.
All right.
Okay. And the way that I do this is I don't have anything prepared. I'm just going to open the book and see where it lands. This is titled, I Am Who You Are. I am who you are. I'm here to both reveal and be revealed. In you lay me. In the depths of me lie you. We swim in the same ocean of longing, of love, of absolute rapture, synchronized stroke by precious stroke. Even yet now, breath by breath, you are who I am, who I am, you are. Mm. Okay. Another one is golden like a leaf. The sheer sight of you is golden, like an autumn leaf falling free in the gentle breeze. I stand to watch mesmerized at each moment as you, like a leaf, separate from branch after branch to begin your free fall. Your laughter fills the skies as your reverie rivals even the golden leaf in boundless flight. Let's see what else I got here. This one is actually there's a painting, and there are seven paintings by visionary artist Natasha Kiefer. And we sat down together, and I would read the poetry, and we collaborated, and she did the paintings that are in the book. And this one is actually called Deeper, and it's for the cover of the book as well. This morning, we tiptoe into the river of breath, allowing each inhale, exhale, to take us deeper, ever deeper than before. Here there is no shallow, no surface, only going deeper into our own ocean, an inner world rich, expansive, and unceasing in its constant revelations of you as we go even deeper still.
Paul, tell us a little bit more about the paintings and about why you wanted to include that in this book, and have you done that in your other books?
I've not. I've got another idea that I might do for the next book. I've known Natasha for several years, about 5 years, and she is a true intuitive visionary artist. She does fine paintings, and she also does paintings that are very much like what I do. They're intuitive. They're based purely on her response to the individual that's there with her, and in this case, me and the poetry that's being read. And so I wanted to see what would happen if we put the poetry together and the paintings, and what would be the result of that. And it's just worked out really, really well. The book is exquisite, and I think we accomplished what we set out to, which is, you know, show the crossroads of the intersect of painting and poetry. And I've actually got a poem about it called The Gift of Brush, if you'd like to hear that.
Sure.
Okay, and this is The Gift of Brush for Natasha. Within your soft brushstrokes are revealed the same one who sets these words to page. It is in that common intersect of art and poetry where we each listen
deeply listen to the voice that never guides us into places we are not ready to go. You command paint to appear as your inner vision sees. I apply these words to the blank page, praying that each of them can even come close to conveying what my heart hears. We are each grateful recipients of this gift of brush, allowing our own palette to display colors unseen until now. You know?
Yeah.
I'm a frustrated painter.
Well,
I have many, many references to paintings in my poem. Van Gogh shows up, Monet, you know. And what's interesting now is that my wife Dawn has also taken off on her own painting. Who knows? Maybe she and I will collaborate on something.
Do you ever try painting yourself?
Finger painting. you got to work with what you're given, you know. And I was given the gift of brush with words, not with a paintbrush. I don't think. It would be an interesting experiment to see what happens, because as my own awakening really to the world around me, anything's possible. And I think my hands are full with just transcribing the poems that come through me. So. Mm. I will tell you this, Monica, though. I do take some phenomenal photographs. You know, it's amazing what a smartphone can do.
Isn't it, though?
I will post those in my...
It is amazing, and so maybe one of your poetry books you'll illustrate with your own photographs.
I think that's very likely, and that may happen in the future. You know, you can kind of get it down to a little magnification and take a picture real close up of a flower to exhibit the sacred geometry and go from there.
Absolutely.
There's some amazing things that can be done.
I know. I've been going through...
I'm really excited, Anna.
Old photos lately, and man, you know, those old 110 cameras really didn't do much.
No, not too much. Well, yeah. You know, I had an SLR, a single lens reflex camera with 35 millimeter and all this kind of thing at one time, and it's amazing that really the pictures I'm capturing with a cell phone are as good as some of those, because so much of it is being done automatically.
I know.
I'm probably offending every photographer out there, but you know, we actually had an exhibit. I mean, there are people who exhibit their cell phone photography. They have it professionally developed some way.
Yeah. Well, it's all in how you print it, I think. And So you mentioned...
I go to Fairfield and then... Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk a little bit about your tour. Is this your first tour for this book?
Let's see. I started actually towards the latter part of April. I was out in Irvine, California, out at a place called the Temple of Light for a holistic healing fair, and that was kind of an interesting venue. And so what's happening now is I'm trying to take the tour kind of close by and then expand out a little further. So once Fairfield happens on the 26th of June, then the 10th, 11th, and 12th of July, I'll be in Indianapolis, Cincinnati, and Columbus. And I'm excited when I can get three cities close together.
Oh, definitely.
Only 2.5 hours apart from each other.
Wow.
You know? So I can magnify my efforts there. And let's see what happens after that. Then the middle of August is Atlanta. I've got to stop there. And I'm really excited about the latter part of August. I'm doing this from memory. I've got another grouping of places. There's a town in southwest Colorado, about 3.5 hours north of Taos, called Crestone. And it's in the Crestone, Salida area. And Crestone apparently is a little bit like Sedona, Arizona. Mm-hmm. And there's an individual who apparently donated a ton of land to different mindfulness schools. And I'm booked on Friday, August 28th at the Shumai International Center, which is a Japanese mindfulness center. The pictures I've seen, it looks incredibly beautiful. And they do a Friday night performance in their amphitheater outside. And apparently Colorado weather is questionable what it may do at that time of year. Could be hot, could rain, anything's possible, I guess. But I'm excited to be at that venue. And from there we head south to Taos. And I've actually been booked at SOMOS, which is the Southwest Literary Society, the Literary Society of the Muse in Taos, New Mexico, of which I'm now a member as well.
The Literary Society of what?
Of Taos.
Of Taos? Oh, cool.
Taos, New Mexico. Yeah. It's called SOMOS, S-O-M-O-S. And so I'll be there, and then after that appearance and driving through Santa Fe, we'll end up in Albuquerque. And then there's all sorts of other pieces. It looks like there's a possibility of a bunch more stops on the West Coast, a bunch more stops on the East Coast, possibly beginning in Washington, D.C., and Gettysburg, Maryland, and some places like that. Additionally, looking at some places in New Orleans and Florida.
Wow, that's pretty extensive.
This is going to take me into about October sometime. Wow. So we'll see how everything goes.
Now, have you done this sort of these events before this tour, or is this a new thing?
Well, I've got an interesting background too, because I've been one of the advantages that I have is I've been a promoter. So I've really been a promoter and producer. I produced my own CD. We had a metaphysical gift shop in Kansas City called Stone Spirit Lodge back in 2010 and 2011. And being the business owner, I was also the promoter, and we would schedule concerts. I actually produced a concert here for an international chant group, Deva Premolin Meeton. Did that in 2011. So I have experience in producing events, and I also have hosted open mics, and then I'd be generally the host and the featured poet for that.
Wow.
So if anybody wants to do what I'm doing, and they're a writer, an author, a poet, you got to be ready to wear many hats, and so it really helps to have both the producer and promoting background that I've got along with it.
And your bio says that you're also the former host of Journey into Oneness on Co-Creator Radio Network. So you've got
yes,
it.
Yes, yes. And I apologize because that's half the reason I probably keep trying to interrupt, because I'm used to doing the interviews. I'll have to learn to be quiet.
It's tricky on the phone sometimes because you can't necessarily hear. There's a little bit of a delay on this phone. We don't have the...
There is.
Yeah. And that makes it tricky.
That cleans up.
Yeah, yeah. So.
So yeah, the Journey into Oneness. I got to do this radio show. It was an internet radio show for Co-Creator Radio Network. A friend of mine suggested I do it, and they were very pleased. I mean, they found me to be one of the best interviews they had. I want to do another show. So that operated from February of 2012. Through October of 2012, and it's available at the archives of the show are available even on podcasts on iTunes.
Oh, cool.
And I interviewed authors and poets and healers and mediums and a Zen monk who I knew, a fellow named Jinpo, Dennis Kelly. And he was my first guest. That was the most fun. We did an hour show, and they would talk about what was going on with them, what they were looking at doing, what if they had a new book out, you know, if they were doing some webinars, if they were touring with some seminars, whatever they were doing, and it was a blast.
And why did you stop?
It took some time. I mean, I did an hour show a week, and you might know about that.
Yep.
It took a bit of preparation.
Yeah.
And with the writing and the promoting and then, you know, everything else, it was time to take a break. And my friend Mary, who's involved with that out of Austin, Texas, is looking at it's still going on, Co-Creator Radio Network. But there may be some different changes to it, and I may be going back to that or another similar radio broadcast. I'd really like to do it again. It was a hoot. and I would totally be able to fit it in around what I do now.
Doing radio interviews is, it is motivating for me, even though it doesn't, you know, it's not really lucrative, but it is, I get to meet and talk to really a lot of amazing people that I would never have any, would never have run across in any other way. So it's fun.
Yeah, that was, yeah. I still get, I don't know how to get my name out of it, I still get emails all the time from publicists who are wanting to book somebody for my show.
Mm-hmm. Thank goodness for those publicists.
Maybe I've done okay, though.
Thank goodness for those publicists, because they definitely make my job easier.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So I think I'm kind of keeping that pipeline open for when I
right.
next show.
Right. You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Paul Goldman, and his book is Upon Your Canvas. It's a book of poetry and painting, and Paul will be doing an ecstatic poetry reading at Revelation, 7 p.m. Friday, June 26th, here in Fairfield, Iowa. And if you're listening to us online and from a distance, hey, come on down to Fairfield. We'd love to have you.
Now, if we only had video, you could also see my cat. She's a great tabby. Name is Lexi. And she's taken some strong interest to watch the goings-on here.
Ah.
That kind of cat.
Now, Paul, you mentioned...
Locked herself on the floor by me.
You mentioned that you have a lot of Facebook followers, and so you use social media to promote your work as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I would say 6 years ago, I didn't know social media from anything, and I've had some wonderful mentors along the way. And so I started out with a Twitter account probably 6 years ago, and that's at Spirit Poet. So you can find that at Spirit Poet. And that's grown to over 15,000 followers on Twitter.
Wow.
And then, of course, I've got my... Exactly. Exactly, and it's growing. I mean, I keep learning more things about networking and you know, this, that, and the other. And
how often do you...
Probably eventually.
How often do you tweet?
Excellent. I didn't know a tweet from anything. One of the other tools that I was given, you know. So now, and I love to talk this way, because so my tweets, basically, most of the time, I don't do anything with them. I have a service that I use that is semi-automated. So I have tweets going out that are semi-automated tweets. Say that real fast. Okay? So I actually have a service, and what I use is Social Oomph, and there is a small cost to that. I load in how many tweets that I want to load in and schedule them to go out maybe every 20 minutes, every hour. So, you know, I've got over the last 6 years, it gives you the running total, I probably had 89,000 tweets.
Oh, my gosh.
Most of them, I didn't do the legwork. I mean, I didn't have to sit there and put them in. I did the initial work in Social Oomph, and... I was really taught on a really neat model by a mentor with this, and I've had several, and kind of a formula of 80-20. So now I'm giving away all the secrets that I want to teach. That's fine. I put in like 80% of quotes about love and light, since this is about spirituality. So I'm quoting anybody. They don't even come to mind, but, you know, Deepak Chopra, Wayne Dyer, you know, I'm quoting anybody like that, and authors and poets and all kind of inspirational stuff. And that's mostly what I sent out. And then the other portion are going to be requests. Take a look at this video. Check out my author page on Amazon. So you kind of see the idea that it's informational and then it's asking.
Mm-hmm.
And the informational is inspirational. So that's how that's grown and continues to grow, just through networking. And then... we begin to retweet each other's tweets, and then somebody does that for me, I'm obviously going to retweet their tweets. We're doing that between a lot of us authors now, too.
Wow.
So we help spread the word with each other. It's a very, by and large, cooperative community that you can get into. It's like anything on Facebook. There's the negative aspects, and then you just have to find the appropriate people to work with. I still get some crazy followers that I have to block.
Mm. So how do you use Facebook? Yeah, how do you use Facebook?
So Facebook, again, when I started out with that, didn't have any followers, didn't know how to grow it. And that's just happened organically, again, by networking, by being involved. I would liken myself to be in the early days and hopefully a little bit more directed now, but a serial poster. So, you know, I would find pages that were about topics I was interested in that were inspirational, and I would post on the page with a link to my page, right? And mm-hmm. my page is Wild Joy, the Ecstatic Poetry of Paul Goldman, so it's pretty easy to find, right?
Right.
And when I set that up, and I think that page has also been out about 6 years, and it's now grown to almost 33,000.
Wow. Wow, you've got some...
And it's a...
Yeah, you've got... What's it called when you have a social media presence like that? There's a word, but it'll come to me later.
Not an influencer. I don't know. I don't know what the term would be.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know...
And then, you know, so what...
When we've talked to writers and publishers over these last few years, a common theme is the fact that by having by developing a platform for yourself that is what helps you actually attract a publisher, a traditional publisher. They want their authors to have a platform.
And I think even going back, that's probably the word we could have plugged in when I was talking with John Hunt, the publisher of O Books. I think I was able to describe and use that term at that time. Yeah, forget that. Platform, yeah. So I definitely have a platform. I mean, if you figure I've got almost 50,000 people. The real trick for any of us who write, any of us who are passionate about what we do is really want to get that into the hands of the people, too. So... Facebook and Twitter, it's kind of interesting because people are willing to hear and to respond to what's being said, and then to try to watch and see if that translates then to going to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or whatever, the bookseller, and picking up the book.
And does it?
That's always your dance.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an ever-growing process, yeah.
Well, Paul, we only have about 10 minutes or so left, and there's a poem in your book that really drew my attention because it's based on my favorite rock song of all time, Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen.
What it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you share that with us and how you came to write that poem?
So are you a Leonard Cohen fan?
I definitely am.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to preface this with all of this. I have a brother who's 2 years older, and one of the things I look back on that amazes me, because when I was writing that poetry, when I was 15, he bought me my first poetry book, which was The Spice Box of Earth by Leonard Cohen. Yeah, and then shortly after that, I found Leonard Cohen's album with Suzanne on it.
Mm-hmm.
Suzanne takes you down to a place by the river where she feeds you tea and oranges, but I can't sing either. So, so I can't sing, so I had to write this poem just for just because of how it makes me feel. And Leonard's version I still think is beautiful. There's one by K.D. Lang. Mm-hmm. There's another one by Jeff Buckley. There's probably 400 versions of this song out there. So I did this in response to how I feel about the song, and I've included an epigraph which quotes Leonard Cohen. And so the poem is called The Fourth, the Fifth, the Minor Fall, the Major Lift. And I'll quote Leonard Cohen here at the beginning. I've heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord. But you don't care for music, do you? It goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. what I'm telling. And here's the poem. Yes, I've come to you to sing, to only sing hallelujah, hallelujah. For I too have seen the Lord, and he says to tell you hello, to ask how you are. Hallelujah, hallelujah. Yes, I've experienced the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, and the heavenly major lift. Hallelujah, hallelujah. Of them all, I do not so much remember the fourth or the fifth, and only too well recall the minor fall. Hallelujah, hallelujah. I'm here to tell you the major lift is real, so real. The time comes when there's nothing left. The only way to go is up. Grab on for the major lift. Ride your fourth, your fifth, and even your minor fall. For surely comes your major lift. Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
So, Paul, not only did you focus on my, like, number one song, you focused on my number one verse on that in that song. I can't hear that without getting chills, that particularly Leonard Cohen's version and Katie Lang's.
I have, especially after open heart surgery, I went into it after having interviewed my Zen priest for my first show in 2012, so that was 2 years before the surgery. He gave me a little goodie that I took into the surgery. It's not dying that scares me, it's living. So I see that as a celebratory thing, you know? Mm. If there's no fear of death, then life is a grand celebration. And I kind of tie that story in because I've told my wife, I've said, look, and I just mentioned it to you, I said, there's three versions of Hallelujah. Have a celebration at my wake. Play those. Everybody dance. Sing. Mm. I don't plan to go anytime soon. I'm just saying, you know. It is my favorite song.
Yeah.
And there was another one. In my journey in the oneness book, John Lennon's Beautiful Boy.
I'm not familiar with that.
And I did a poem.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh. That's a beautiful, beautiful one. If we've got a second, I could read it to you.
Please.
But I've got to find it.
Okay, well, while you're looking, I'll remind our listeners that this is Writer's Voices, and our guest today is Paul Goldman. His new book is Upon Your Canvas, and he will be at Revelations Friday, June 26th, 7 p.m.
Thanks. And this, again, has an epigraph from John Lennon. And I know some people will recall the song. I titled the poem, At Last, A Beautiful Boy. And then the epigraph from John Lennon. Close your eyes. Have no fear. The monster's gone. He's on the run, and your daddy's here. Beautiful, 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 beautiful boy. Beautiful, 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 beautiful boy. John Lennon. Yes, John, it has taken me many years to see the truth. Indeed, now when I look in the mirror, I fear no monsters as I only see the face of love. The beloved herself shines upon me as if affirming, I am the most beautiful, beautiful boy. I wish you were here. I wish you were here, beautiful, beautiful John, as I am at last a beautiful, beautiful boy, and I need know nothing more than this, only being beautiful.
Thank you. Paul, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned that you are a prolific writer. How do you decide which poems make it into your books?
I love that question. I would like to give you some erudite answer and that a lot of thought and gnashing of teeth goes into it. It's kind of an intuitive process, the same way that I write. It's as if I'm asking, and I really am, what poem wants to go in here. And there's kind of this give and take. To even give you another example, Monica, when I did this, started back when I did the CD, I took 40 poems into the studio, and at 18 poems, the sound engineer said, we're only going to have room for 30 poems. It's going to be tight. Throw out 10. And so it was really, you know, throw out 10 of the best poems that you brought, right?
So, right.
And I did that same process. It's kind of like just, okay, what's going to stay, what's going to go?
Mm.
And it's a real intuitive feel. And it's really, I tell you why it's really, really so cool. Because it helps me with one of my lifelong goals to work at non-attachment. Because I've got to be okay. Well, wait a minute. Ego, I say this one goes. Oh, this doesn't feel right. This one wants to be in here. Now, you know, so you know, you begin to wonder, is a writer hearing voices? Well, sure.
Do you have a favorite of the poems you've written?
Oh, my gosh. You know, and that's the joy. I go back in them and I find things that I've written, and I'm like you. And, I mean, they do have my name on them, so I know that I didn't copy them from somebody. But I go back, did I write that? you know, there's a lot of them that I really, really like. There's not too many of them, especially over the last number of years. I'm pretty pleased with a lot of them, especially the ones that are revising themselves in the process.
So the ones that don't make it into a book, do you use those in your Twitter feed or in Facebook or in any other way?
Yeah, I'm always using parts and pieces of my poems.
Yeah.
Either in the Twitter feeds, because you can only get, you know, so many 140 characters, you can't get in too much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But none of them have been thrown away. I mean, they're all available to be in a new book. So it depends on how they come together. It may be, when I do a new book, that there's some poems that have been around for a while that somehow now fit with a new book. Quite interesting. Like they were written at the same time, but they're written a year and a half apart. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I do. Well, so, we're about out of time, Paul. Why don't you leave us with one more poem?
Oh my gosh, just one more. Okay, let's do this. This is from the center of the book, and there's a beautiful painting that goes with it. So this is from Upon Your Canvas, and it's called Reaching Out. Reaching out, I reach back to me. Let me try that again. Reaching out to you, I reach back to me. Arms that enfold you are not only my arms. They are the very same arms of the beloved. What if in reaching out to another, we were to become aware of just whose arms so intertwine us? There would be a celebration of ceaseless reaching out, one to another, arms enfolding each other, arms enfolding the globe. Picture that. Just picture that.
That's a very cool painting.
Ah, you're looking at it as well.
I am, yes, I am.
What Natasha did there was, she made a conscious choice. We didn't want the traditional arms encircling the globe kind of thing. And you can see there that she's done something more impressionistic, and I think even more powerful than what we would normally think of in, you know, just arms wrapped around the world.
Absolutely. Well, Paul, we talked about your Facebook page and Wild Joy, the ecstatic poetry of Paul Goldman, and your Twitter at Spirit Poet, and you also have a website, ecstaticpoet.com, and your books are available where?
Everywhere. You can get them on Amazon and at Barnes & Noble. It's your local bookseller. I know they're for sale at the Book Loft in Columbus, Ohio. At the booksellers at Laurelwood in Memphis, Tennessee.
And any independent bookstore can order.
Yes, any independent bookstore, yes.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us here today. And we'll see you in Fairfield Friday evening, June 26th, 7 p.m. Revelations.
Sounds fantastic. Thanks, Monica. Appreciate your time.
Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, produced by Monica Hadley and James Moore. Archives available on KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com.